Okay. So, at the end of the Megillah, the end of the whole story, so it mentions that the Jews accepted upon themselves four mitzvahs for Purim. That last it says to me, Mishta v'simcha, to make the days of Purim days of drinking and happiness, u'mishlach monis ishel re'eyu, and sending portions for a man to his friend, u'matanis avyeinim, and giving gifts to the poor, and obviously the reading of the Megillah. Those are the four mitzvahs of the day. We're not going to discuss the Megillah. The halachas of the Megillah are very, very intricate, and at the end of the day, not so applicable to most of us. It's you come to shul and you hear it, so you have to know. If you don't hear something, you have to read it, and so on and so forth, but it would take a lot more than one shir to get through all that anyway. Okay, so we're first going to discuss Matanus Avyeinim, the Mishlach Manus, and then the Suda, and then maybe a few other customs throughout the day. First thing we have to know, something that pertains to all the mitzvahs, is there's a halacha mitzvah tzriches kavanah. When you do a mitzvah, you have to have in mind that you're doing this in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Therefore, if you sit down to eat your massive Purim Suda, and you don't have in mind particularly that you're eating this because there's a special mitzvah of eating on Purim and having a Suda on Purim, you don't fulfill it. Same thing with Mishlach Manas or Matanis Avyeinim. If you give tzedakah without thinking that this is particularly for Matanis Avyeinim as opposed to tzedakah, you are not yet to the mitzvah. Okay, Matanis Avyeinim. Who is obligated in the mitzvah? Obviously, every man and woman who is a gadol reached bar mitzvah. Even though the wife and the kids who are still at home are still subject to the husband, the father's parnasa, and he supports them, and essentially, rabbinically, everything that is theirs really belongs to him, so they don't have what to give, they're still commanded in it, and we're going to discuss exactly how they fulfill the mitzvah. Also, there's a mitzvah of chinuch, and therefore, your kids, under the age of bar and bas mitzvah, there are those who hold that for Matanos Avyeinim starts at the age of 6 or 7, there are those who hold that it starts from the age of 9, but there definitely is a mitzvah of chinuch for kids before bar and bas mitzvah as well. So, somebody who, a wife or kids above bar and bas mitzvah that don't have their own belongings, essentially, how do they fulfill the mitzvah? Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach holds that there's no special halacha that the matanis avyeinim, the money for the poor, has to come from something that belongs to them. So as long as they go ahead and they have permission to go and take some money and give it to the poor, that's good enough. Rav Yashiv holds that, and I think this is generally the minhag, is that it should particularly belong to the person who's giving it to the poor, and therefore you should either the husband should, or the father should give the money to the wife or to the kids, and say this is for you, this belongs to you entirely, nothing to do with me, and then they go ahead and give it to the poor. Another thing is, if they're not going to go ahead and do it directly, the husband, the father, can go to the person, the messenger, the one collecting it for the poor, and say that before you give it to the poor, you should do a kinyan, and you should acquire it for my wife, for my kids, and through that it belongs to them, and then it goes to the poor. Younger kids, before bar and bas mitzvah, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, obviously, you don't have to give it to them. According to Rav Yashiv, you should still give it to them once they reach the age of 6 or 7, where they could give over something. They can have something that belongs to them and give it over and have somebody else acquire it. So then you should give it to them. It should be theirs. Generally, that's not the minig. The minig is, for ketanim at least, just to have them give them some money and then they go ahead and give it. How much do you have to give? So, it's matanos le'avyeinim. It's a plural. The Gemara says it's plural. It's two, at least two gifts to two aniyim, which means one gift to each ani, and you have to have two poor people to give to. The halachic authorities have a disagreement what the amount is, whether it's a shava pruta, which today is roughly 2-3 cents, but in the times of the Gemara, that was enough to for a meal. So when they set up the halacha, it wasn't meaningless, but today it sort of is. And there are those who hold that it was meant to, the idea of Matana Savyanim is so that a poor person should have enough to have a Suda on Purim, therefore you have to give him enough for a Suda. It doesn't have to be a very lavish Suda, but it has to be enough for a Suda. And generally most Paiskim hold that we do go with that the letter of the law is that a Shava Pruta is enough, but being that today that's meaningless, you should give enough for a meal. Rabbi Heber told me that here he says $5, that's enough to, if you go to the card on the JCC, you can get something. Obviously, you can't take into account what they sell at McDonald's because he can't eat that. Now,
is having somebody at your house for a meal suffice for that if you're giving them the opportunity to have a meal?
There,
you have to give cash.
There is a machlokes whether it has to be money or it could be food. Generally, I think we hold that you could give food, but you have to give it to him. You can't just put a plate in front of him. You have to give it to him as Matanis Avyanim. If there are other people in the suit there besides for him, it's probably not a good idea to do that. Besides, Rabbi Heber told me that Baruch Hashem, he doesn't think that since he's been dealing with the Matanis Avyanim in Norfolk, he's ever come across somebody who we can honestly say is considered a poor person according to halacha to get Matanis Avyanim completely. So anyways, here you probably wouldn't come across that. The wording of the Rambam, which is brought down by the later Paiskim, the Mishnah Brura, and many others, is that the more you give to the...
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What are the qualifications of an Ani, to qualify to receive that?
So it's dependent on the difference between Ani and Evyon. For tztaka, generally you only need to be an Ani, because the wording of the pasuk here is an Evyon, which is much more less. What?
Destitute.
Evyon is destitute, Ani is poor.
We're talking about a poor person, not a
destitute. So the pasuk says Evyon, which is destitute. There's a disagreement whether you have to give particularly to a destitute person or poor is enough. Rosh Hashem Zalman holds it has to be somebody that can't put together enough based on salary and side income and what else to have the mere basics for a year. There are many varying different opinions.
Right. I think it's
there are many different opinions.
We can't afford the next two meals.
Right.
What?
Yeah, there's definitely an opinion that as well.
Yeah, but what I do is, for someone who can't afford the next two meals, Baruch Hashem, I don't think we have anybody. So for that, if you send $10 to Yerushalayim, that Od Yosef Chai takes care of that. Now, there are people here who are in need, but to say that they're so in need they can't afford the next two meals, I feel more comfortable saying, well, send $10 to Yerushalayim and then whatever else you can take care of locally. So.
Okay. So the Rambam says on this halacha of Matanis Avyanim that the more somebody gives to the poor is praiseworthy and it's good to do, better than spending more on his suda and his mishloach manos to his friends, because there's no greater happiness and joy and praiseworthy thing than making the hearts of the poor and the orphans and widows happy. And it brings him to a great level of being similar to Hashem. The Avnei Yeshua says, what does it mean to give, to do more in Matanis Avyanim than Mishloach Manos and the Suda? He says, it must mean that you're making a calculation of how much you're spending on your Suda and how much you're spending on your Mishloach Manos, and you add that together, and whatever you give to the poor should be more than that. That's not the letter of the law, obviously, but it's something that's definitely praiseworthy. And
so that's the recommendation, correct?
Yeah, there's a recommendation.
To give more to the poor than you would have spent over the
Yeah. Okay, when do you do Matanis Avyanim? Matanis Avyanim has to be done on Purim. You're not allowed to give it to the poor person before Purim because we're afraid he might use the money due to his situation before Purim, and being that the main purpose is for him to eat the Suda on Purim, he won't have it, then you're not Yitz. But very often is the case that you don't necessarily come in contact with a poor person on Purim, and especially if you need an Evian that can't afford the next two Sudas. There are many places, Baruch Hashem, where Jews aren't holding there. So there are different ways to do it. You can give it to a messenger, somebody who's trustworthy, to go ahead and give it to the poor person on Purim. And he'll go on Purim, he'll go ahead and give it to you. But you have to be careful that very often when a person accepts money for the poor, somebody, a gabbai tzedaka, somebody who collects money for the poor, very often their intent is, I'm taking the money now, and he's doing what's called a zchia, he's acquiring it for the poor person. You have to make it clear to the person, if you give it to him before Purim, that he shouldn't acquire it then, because if he acquires it then for the poor person, then again, you're giving essentially giving it to the poor person before Purim. Rather, he should hold on to it and give it to the poor person only on Purim. The consensus of most halachic authorities is that you can't, if your Purim is on Yud Daled of Adar, the 14th of Adar, you can't give Matanis Avyanim on the 14th of Adar to somebody in Yerushalayim who their Purim is on the 15th, because if you give it on the 14th, then it's before that person's Purim, and if you give it on the 15th, then you already missed Purim without giving it. And
unless,
so,
unless you go through a shliach, like you talked about, and let them know that should be
no, because
no?
Is when is the shliach giving it to the poor person? If he gives it on to the shliach on the 15th, then my Purim already passed, and I didn't do the mitzvah.
Right? Can't you give it to the shliach in advance? I mean, that's like what we do with Od Yosef Chai.
Yeah, right. But Od Yosef Chai gives it to a poor person in Bnei Brak who has Purim on the same day. If the poor person's Purim is on the 15th and mine's the 14th, so if I give it to him, if the shliach gives it to the poor person on the 14th...
Let's find out exactly what they... I know they're careful about this, but it's true.
Right.
All their ads talk about Yerushalayim.
Unless
Yerushalayim, all the
Yerushalmis
go to Bnei Brak, which would be a good fundraising move.
That happens to you. There was
maybe
a story.
They all go to Bnei Brak for the day.
There was a story of a widower that they were collecting for her in Bnei Brak, and Rav Shlomo Zalman said that in order not to... cause everybody in Bnei Brak that's giving Matanis of Yanim for her not to fulfill the mitzvah, she had to go to Bnei Brak for Purim in order that she should keep Purim the same day.
Because it's in the same time period as Yerushalayim is a different day. Bnei Brak is the same day as we have it here.
The walled cities are the time of Joshua.
Anyway,
day later.
Can you explain to us when it's appropriate the difference between giving to a widow? I mean, that's not considered a poor person, so why is it, why are you including
Well,
widow?
She would have to be poor. She would have to be poor, obviously. There are different levels of tzedakah and who comes first. If you have three poor people, and then you have to decide which one to give first, and the different priorities, and the widow or...
But a widow who's not poor wouldn't qualify.
Right, 100%.
Because what I was wondering from that is that should we look for somebody who was widowed this year through terror or something, and give for that, but that's not the case. It has to be a poor person.
It has to be a poor person. If, you know, becoming a widow is, you know, she became poor because of it, because there's not enough income in the home, then it's definitely something worthy. Okay, another thing is, for the mitzvah, as far as time is concerned, is we have a halacha of zrizim makdim in the mitzvahs. Those who are, you should always be quick to do the mitzvahs and not delay. And therefore, Matanis Avyanim is brought down. You should do it immediately after davening, before you have your Suda. But more than just that, it's better to. It would seem, and many do say this outright, that you're not allowed to have your Suda before. Just like any rabbinic mitzvah, you're not allowed to sit down and have a mitzvah, have a set meal beforehand because we're afraid you might, it might, the meal might extend, especially on Purim where you're getting drunk, and you might not end up forgetting to do the mitzvah. Therefore, you can't sit down, you can't have a set meal before giving matan sof yom.
I'm sorry, just to back up a second. I don't mean to get in the weeds. But this whole idea about the giving, and then it has to be. You know, not in your shot. It can't be, because even if you give on Purim here, so for one thing,
They're not going to get the money.
And also,
well, the way they set it up,
even in Bnei Brak, if you did it after.
If you do five in the afternoon, it's going to be.
It's going to be over.
They send me every year. It's probably actually go check. They have it, and they send me a list of how they do every Chumrah.
Right. So they have there are letters from the stipler. The way he used to do it with messengers in America is that he would give it out, you know, in those 2 hours close to the end of the day where it was already per morning in America, and there's still enough time to give the poor person the money that essentially if he wanted to he can go and buy food for the Suda in Bnei Brak. There's nothing to do with Yerushalayim. Again, the stipler was in Bnei Brak, so he was doing with America, which worked out because it was both on the 14th day. You still had a window of, you know, 2-3 hours. It's a 7-hour difference. You still have a window of time where it would work.
Yeah, no, they didn't. Israel, Odio Zichai will take till. They'll probably take till Pesach, but they will.
That's a separate issue.
No, but I'm calling in still. Yeah. We're having the Suda and Shul, and I'm calling in. That might already be going to your office. I wonder if they're doing that.
If a person's stuck, there are opinions that you could. It's probably better to do that than not doing anything. But, you know, generally, the overall consensus of most authorities that should be given to somebody who's keeping Purim the same day, when it's Purim for you and Purim for them, and so it should be worked out. There is a very famous line that is said over on Purim, Kol HaPoshet Yad Nesimle, anybody who extends their hand, you give to them. If you look in the way the Shulchan Aruch brings it, he seems to say that that's part of a halacha within Matanas of Yainim, that meaning that if somebody comes and asks you for money, as far as Matanas of Yainim is concerned, so if you're trying to fulfill your mitzvah Matanas of Yainim, normally when it comes to tzedakah, you have to do your due diligence, making sure he really is a proper ani. When it comes to Matanas of Yainim, maybe it's because of the hectic day and so on and so forth, Chazal didn't require us to do due diligence in the 5 minutes that you have to give it before running to Mishnah Achmanis and the Suda and so on and so forth. The Chassan Sofer in his Chuvis, and it seems very clearly from the tour that it's a separate halacha that has nothing to do with Matanis of Yainim, that there's this idea on Purim that anybody who asks for something, you give it to them, no questions asked. It has nothing to do with Matanis of Yainim, it's a separate thing. I think in most places you find that is the custom in Klal Yisrael, is anybody who comes to you, you give something. There's no required amount. It could be anything, even less than a Shavu Pruta. You give him a penny, you're good to go. Give him something, but a lot, definitely.
Is that katana also?
If, with the second understanding, that's anybody who asks, then yeah, it's anybody.
Including
the Torah says, even a guy.
Even a guy?
Even a guy.
You know, it's a lot.
Okay. Maybe we should make sure to have the altar moved before prayer. Mishlach Manas. Okay, so we're going to discuss a lot about Mishlach Manas. We have to keep in mind that the one of the two reasons given for Mishlach Manas is that it should create feelings of love and friendship between Jews. Because of that, the minig has become to give mishlach manas to who knows how many people. That's not what we're discussing. The halacha is to give two manes, two portions, to one person. Right? So all the halachas we're going to discuss is only for that required amount of giving two portions to one person. Once you go beyond that, if you're adding within that Mishloach Manos giving more than two things, or you're giving to more than one person, you can give whatever you want. There's no particulars as far as the halacha goes. It's just the feelings of friendship, and you give that with anything. Okay, so as far as Mishloach Manos is concerned, who's obligated? Again, just like Matanos Avyanim, man, woman, and kids above the age of Bar Mitzvah. Now again, also, we're going to come into similar difficulties of they don't have what belongs to them. It doesn't really belong to them. It belongs to the husband and the father, and we're going to discuss that. Also here, by Mishloach Manos, there's also a mitzvah of chinuch, a requirement to be of teaching and getting younger kids under the age of Bar Mitzvah to do it, just like any mitzvah derabanan. There is a disagreement about it, but that seems to be what we go with. So, the Mishnah Berurah and the Magen Avraham say that we haven't necessarily seen that women, married women, are necessarily so careful to give their own Mishloach Manos. Rather, the husband gives for them. They say you should still be machmir, which means that from the letter of the law, essentially the husband can give from the family to a different family, and you're good to go. But it definitely is proper to be stringent, and that she should give on her own.
But isn't it a time-bound mitzvah? Did you have to do it on a Purim? So if it's a time-bound mitzvah, aren't women exempt?
It was, except that this was implemented by Chazal, and because women were also part of the Nes, then they obligated them as well in all the mitzvahs. Similarly, we find by the four kaisis at the Seder, as well as Hanukkah, that women are obligated because they were part of the Nes as well.
So I gave Rabbi Wasowski money for Mishloach Manos. How does that fulfill me in the... Does it?
Last year, I don't think it did, because the food wasn't something that was ready to be eaten as was. It was a challah.
Some of it.
Maybe. But we'll get there.
Okay.
Rosh Zalman says, in order to fulfill the stringency of the wife giving on her own, the husband... it's enough that the husband give it for the wife, and he tells the wife that he did it for her. But Rav Yashiv holds that no, she should send it. She can give it to the husband to give, but she should be involved. She should send it. As far as ketanim, as far as chinuch goes for the book under Bar Bas Mitzvah, you don't have to. Again, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, you don't have to give it to them. That it should be theirs to give it. According to Rav Yashiv, you do, as long as they got to the age of 6 or 7. And they bring down in halacha that you should always, even what you give, you should give it through your kids. Let your kids do the mitzvah, even if it's for yourself and you're doing the mitzvah. But as we're going to see later, there's an idea of particularly not handing it over yourself, but using a messenger. And the regular halachas of shlichas, of messengers, don't apply, and therefore you can give it to your kids, and you should try to do that to be mechanech on the mitzvahs. In Aval, a mourner is chayv in all the mitzvahs, he's chayv in Mishloach Manos, but he should not be sending something of... that brings about extra simcha, wine, or something very fancy. And some bring down that sending an aval as well, Mishloach Manos, should also be limited, if at all, should be limited to things that are not shel simcha. How much do you have to give?
Send to his wife, or send to the family.
Yeah, a man can't send to a wife, but You can send from family to family, and you can, that's fine. How much do you have to give? Like we said, you have to give two portions. What is considered a portion? So when the pasuk says mana, a portion, it means something that's either food or drink. You can't give cash, you can't give clothes, it's food or drink. And it has to be something which is accepted by most people to be something honorable. It'll be a portion that you're willing to serve at the Suda. A minimal amount of food or drink that we find, like a kazayas or a vias, that's not enough. It has to be something that's something that you would serve at the Suda. Something that you have to serve. It doesn't have to be the main course, right? If you can, you can prepare, I don't know, dips or a side dish or something, or a dessert, but it has to be something that you would be willing to serve. So too, the Mishnah Berurah brings that if you're sending to, if a poor person is sending to somebody who's wealthy, then he has to be careful to send something that the wealthy person would be comfortable serving at his Suda, because the whole point is that he should feel that, that friendship, and if you're giving him something that to him isn't befitting for that, then it doesn't really work. And they bring also that the source for that, if you look in the sources for that Mishnah Berurah in the Yerushalmi, then it's proven this other way as well, that if a wealthy person gives to a poor person, then the wealthy person has to give something that he would feel that he can serve at his own table, because very possibly a poor person will look at him and say, you wouldn't serve this, then you're giving me your scraps. And that doesn't work. So yeah, it has to be something that is befitting for both people. Okay, a lot of people have this idea, I think it's taught in most preschools already by the teachers, that you have an idea of you have to give two separate things, and they have to be two different brachas. It's not true. It doesn't have to be two different brachas. It has to be two separate portions, and they have to. It has to be something that's ready to eat as is, or very minimal amount of preparation. For instance, Rav Yashiv says if you would give the powdered mashed potatoes or whatever, it's just adding in hot water, that's fine. It doesn't take a lot of work to prepare it. But there's no such thing as two brachas. It could be the same thing. Not only that, they say you can even have the same type of food. But, for instance, two pieces of chicken or two pieces of meat, as long as they're from different parts of the animal that have a slight difference in taste, that's considered two separate portions. If it's the same thing, then it's the same portion, just doubled over. But if it's two separate things, that even if it's the same thing with a slight difference in taste, that's already considered a separate portion. Light drinks, sodas, juices, that all counts, and it's all good. Seltzer is, for all intents and purposes, is considered like water, and is not considered something that is chashuv, that's befitting to serve. If you send something that the person who's receiving it can't eat, whether it be because of his health, or be because he personally doesn't rely on that hechsher, or if he's fleishigs and his minig is to wait 6 hours and there's only 5 hours left to Purim and you're giving him something which is milchigs, you're not yetze. Most things, Shlomo Zalman says, if it's something due to health, then you could be yetze. The reasoning for that is because he can give it to somebody else. If he has at his suda, he has other people, he can still serve it. So if you serve, if you give, according to Rosh Hashanah Zalman, if you give something that's not good for his health, or if he's fleishigs and you give him something that's milchigs, you're okay because most people can eat it, and if he has people by his suit, they can give it to them. Generally, that probably wouldn't work for a different hakshar. Over there, even Rav Shlomo will hold because he might not be able to, you know, very likely not allowed to serve others.
Hold the herring, by the way. Don't send it to me.
Send it to me. I'll give a bottle of scotch.
If I did, I'd give it to you, Julie.
You're not allowed to send something which you can't eat, but he does if it's according to halacha. Meaning, something which is prohibited to eat, generally. You have stam yenam, wine of a guy. Not yayin nesach, that's awesome for everybody, but rabbinic prohibition of stam yenam that a guy touched, or any rabbinic prohibition of food that's prohibited midarabanan, if a person is sick, a chelashin b'sakana, if he has the need to, he's allowed to eat it. Or if it's a chelashayesh b'sakana, is a sick person who's deathly ill, then he's allowed to eat anything which might help him, and therefore even something which is a Torah prohibition, he's allowed to, but even though he's allowed to, you're not eating mashal konos if you send it to him.
Do you have to eat your mashal konos to make the other person yotzei? Or like, can you wait, hold on, let's say you're like leishik and it's a milchik thing. I mean, can you eat it later and that would be yotzei them? Or like you literally...
It has nothing to do with eating. It has to be if you'll be able to benefit from it on perm.
So you don't necessarily... But he doesn't necessarily have to benefit from it on perm.
Right.
He doesn't want his mashal
konos. Right.
Okay.
The pasuk says, "Mishlach maris ish l'reyu," man to his friend. We have a general rule in the Torah that a friend is somebody who is similarly a good Jew. Therefore, somebody who's a Rasha is not keeping the Torah, is not considered re'eyu, and if your only mishlach honus would be sent to him, you would not be fulfilling your mitzvah. But that's only somebody who's not keeping the Torah because he is angry at Hashem and he's doing it in order, I don't believe in this, I don't want to have anything to do with it. But if he's doing it either because he grew up and he doesn't know better, or because, you know, he has a taiva, he wants something, you know, he likes cheeseburgers, what can he do? That's not considered.
So just to be clear, somebody, if you were to give shlach manas to somebody who's not observant, but they're in their mind, they're doing the best they can,
that would be fine.
Yeah.
If somebody who grew up and went to yeshiva and everything and decided, I don't believe in Hashem, I don't want to have anything to do with it, and went off, giving to him would be a problem. Okay. When is mashlach?
If he's the only guy you gave it to.
Right, again,
that
this
would
is
be if he's the only guy you gave it
right,
to
right,
that
right,
guy.
Right.
If you gave it to one other person, then you're
okay
anyway. And it may be a good idea to give him, you know.
Right. Good point.
Okay, the timing for mishlach manas again is on the day of Purim particularly. If you sent it before Purim and it got to the person that you're sending it to on Purim, then it's a machlekes. There are those who lean to say that it's okay, but if you ship stuff in the mail from outside, but
generally
you're not the only ones they're sending to.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Okay.
This is talking about
if you're only sending one,
what do you have to do? If you sent it before Purim and it got to them on Purim, so then there's machlekes whether you did. And just like you mentioned by Matan Savinim, also you should be careful that if that's the one, you're not sending it to somebody who has Purim on a different day. You shouldn't send Mishlach Manas to somebody in your shrine. Again, like Matan Savinim,
well, you can send it to him, it's just not, you're not.
Zizim Akdimim Mitzvahs, and therefore you have to Shalchim, you do your Mishlach Manas right after davening, again, before the Suda, and again, it seems like it should be asur to eat a sudas kva, set meal, before doing mishlach manas. Although there are those who are lenient when it comes to mishlach manas, particularly because the minhag is that when you get mishlach manas, you reciprocate and you give back. So if somebody were, if you sat down to a meal, it's not likely that you're going to forget, because somebody will eventually come, most likely will come knocking at your door to give you mishalach manos, and you'll reciprocate and you're yetzer then. So it's not likely that you'll forget, and therefore there are those who are more lenient. How to go about doing mishalach manos? So the Aruch Liner, in his responsa, says, being that the Chazal, and it says in the pasuk Mishleach Manos, sending it, it would seem to connote that it has to be particularly sent through a messenger, and that you're not giving it on your own. He's not so clear. And the Mishneh Berurah brings this, that it might be better to send it. We are generally, the accepted minig is to be stringent and to send it through somebody else. Like we said, it's the minig to be stringent, but the letter of the law, most of the places can say that if you gave it by yourself, that was the only one that you did, you're good. It is better, but this is not subject to all of the halachas, like I mentioned earlier. It's not subject to all the halachas of shlichas. It doesn't have to be somebody who's equally obligated in the halacha, and so on and so forth. And therefore, you could, and there are those who say you even should, particularly use your young children to have them, to teach them about the mitzvah and to get them used to doing it. If you send it through a messenger, you have to, the person who's receiving it, who's getting it from you, has to know who sent it, because the reason for Mishlach Manos, like we said, is, one of the reasons given, is to foster feelings of love and friendship, and if he doesn't know who sent it to him, it doesn't really bring that about. Generally speaking, we have a halacha of chazaka shliach avit shlichusei, that we can assume that a messenger fulfilled what he was sent to do. But we don't rely on chazakas and these assumptions for Torah obligations. We're only on rabbinical obligations do we rely on them. And being that this is a mitzvah which is midivrei seferim, it's brought down in Nach, and therefore it has certain stringencies of a Torah obligation, and therefore there are those who say that you can't rely on the assumption. So if you're sending, if your neighbor is going to somebody's house and you sent it with him, then you can't rely on the fact that he probably did what I asked him. Rather, he would have to come back and let you know. You can ask him, did you give it to him or not? Okay.
That's as it relates to Shlach Manos, or that's typical law of Shlichos?
So we have an assumption that a general shliach fulfills his shlichas.
Right.
But when it comes to a Torah obligation, you can't rely on an assumption.
Okay.
So being that this was treated stringently like a Torah assumption, according to those, there are some who hold that you wouldn't be able to rely on it, and if the only one that you sent was through a messenger, you would have to double check with him that he actually did it.
And did you say again, I just want to clarify, did you say again, better to send through a messenger?
Yes. Even though generally we hold that it's better to do a mitzvah yourself than to have a messenger, here, because the pasuk says mishleach, the lashon of shlichas, and the understanding is, I don't know if this is what they explain, that there's a certain degree of, I don't know, importance when you send something with a messenger, and that fosters more love and more friendship.
But the typical laws or requirements of the shliach, you don't need to have?
You don't need to have regularly. Have. It doesn't have to be somebody who's equally obligated and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to be. Okay, the Suda. Everyone's obligated to have a Suda on Purim, Mishta V'Simcha, and there's an obligation to be Mechayev, to be mechanech and to teach your young kids as well in mishta v'simcha, enjoyment and drinking. I'm not discussing drinking alcohol. We'll get there. Okay. How do you do, how do you go about the Suda? First of all, it's brought down in the Rama that it's very good and you should learn something before the Suda. It's a little bit. It doesn't mean that you have to sit down and learn for 2 hours. Rosh Shlomo Zalman, as he was filling up the cup to wash his hands, he would say over a Mishnah. And that he would actually, according to some say that sometimes he even just reviewed this halacha, that it's good to learn before it, and that's the way he was yaitze. But you should learn something. Okay, the way it's brought down the Mishnah Berurah and many others, that the way to do the Suda is you gather people, your family, your friends, because a person can't properly enjoy and be happy alone. You're yaitze with that, with coming to a big meal in shul. It doesn't have to be in your house. It should be a Suda which is done with many other people and not alone. But if through having many people there, you're going to come to do things that are not proper, whether it's talking improperly, it does not mean doing outrageously improper things. Any halacha, lashon hara, whatever it is, it's better to sit alone and have simcha as much as you can properly.
Why does it say that you're supposed to have the Suda with people?
It does.
You.
Yeah.
Where and why?
Well, because the whole point of the Suda is to have simcha, the joy. And it's, you can't properly have joy and merriment alone. There's a disagreement. Huh?
He could.
There's a disagreement amongst the authorities whether or not this Suda has to be with bread and you have to wash. The custom is definitely to wash. It's a mitzvah to eat meat during the Suda. And the point of the meat is that it should be something which is chashav, which is proper and befitting, like a Yom Tov meal. Therefore, they bring from Moshe Feinstein that somebody who has a meat sandwich, meaning that that's not something that you would serve in front of an important guest, necessarily, that's, you wouldn't be yaitza with that. You have to have, it doesn't mean you have to have a fancy steak, but you have to have a nice meat dish, and there's a disagreement whether or not chicken is good for that. So much so that it's a mitzvah to have meat on by the Suda on Purim, that there are even those, I'm not paskening, you'll speak to the Rav, because I'm again to any of you, but that a woman who's going to the mikvah that night, the night after Purim, that the minig is that she doesn't eat meat the day prior to going to the mikvah. There are those who are lenient, being that there's such a mitzvah to eat meat during the Suda on Purim, that she could eat it then as well. It's to show the importance of eating meat at the Suda. They bring down the minhag, and many are very important, to light candles, like Shabbos and Yom Tov, especially towards evening when it starts to get dark. You should have a properly lit and nice Suda, and the Aruch HaShulchan brings that it's actually hinted to in the Pasuk, La'ihudim ha'isari, the Jews had light, which is at the end of the Megillah when we celebrate. Another minig to eat on Purim is hamantashen. We won't get into the many Kabbalistic reasons for that. And kreplach, essentially it's meat covered over in some dough, and it, for the same reason there are those who have the minig to eat stuffed cabbage, and the idea being that everything was the whole nace was done in a hidden manner. Hashem isn't written in the Megillah, and therefore we eat things where the main part of the story, right, the meat, is the main part of the dish, but that's hidden. Similarly, there's a minhag to eat the words of the Shulchan Aruch are minei zerayim, things that are planted. There are those who say that it's really any type of leaf. leafy, a green vegetable. And the idea is because that's what Daniel and his friends, Chayre, Zechariah, and Malachi, ate by Nebuchadnezzar. And those who hold that Esther ate it also as well, because that was a way for them to avoid eating treif in the house of the not Jewish king. When do you have the Suda? The minig, the custom, is to have the Suda after Mincha, but because you're busy with Mishlach Manos, Matanos Avyenim, and reading the Megillah. But once you reach the time that it's proper, and because you're busy with that all morning, and then you reach the time where it's proper to, you're allowed to daven Mincha, once you reach that time, you can't have a big Suda, and therefore you have to daven Mincha first. But due to that, the general minhag is to daven mincha particularly early, as early as possible, in order that you could have the suda still, when the main part of your suda will still be during the day.
Is there such a thing to have a suda in the morning as well?
Yes.
Do we have an early mincha here?
Yes, Shula has another mincha. I believe it's 1:45 this year.
I forgot the time, but it's right after an hour of learning and there's great prizes.
Okay. There is a halacha of mechayev in shlivsumi. A person has to become intoxicated on Purim. For some reason, people tend to tie this into the previous halacha of having a suda. My extensive research, I didn't find any source for that. There's a separate halacha of drinking, whether or not it could be other things other than wine is a machlekes, and I think generally we hold that it is better to do it with wine, but you are yaitza with drinking other alcoholic beverages, and it does not have to be done during the suda. You can start early on and go all day. Probably if you start early on, probably generally have to continue most of the day already at that point, but okay. Every Jewish man, again, from the age of bar mitzvah, seemingly, again, if it's something which is not good for him, we're going to see, you're not chayev, but essentially, like every other mitzvah, this is something every man from his bar mitzvah will be chayev. A woman should not. She's not allowed to drink. She's not allowed to get drunk. Chazal have written at length about the severity of a woman getting drunk, and therefore Rav Scheinberg and Yubav Lachaim, Rav Moshe Sternbach, write that so much so that on Purim, where the idea of drinking is for that purpose of getting drunk, they should be so careful and not even drink a revius where she won't get drunk. It's 150 cc's is the biggest share of a revius. It's not a lot, but because that's the point of drinking on Purim, she should stay away and not drink at all. There, in this mitzvah, there is no mitzvah to be mechanach your young sons to do so.
Can you say those things in English too?
What?
Say those things in English too.
Mechanach?
No.
I thought also abbreviation to that conjugation should let me in.
I thought it was just basically a mitzvah that you wouldn't be able to know the difference between Mordechai.
Yeah, that's
and
how much is a separate.
And therefore, you could accomplish this much safer way by taking a nap.
We're gonna get there. We're just discussing who is chayev. Okay, so men are chayev, women are not, and more than not chayev are strongly suggested against drinking, even as much as 150 cc's, and there's no obligation at all to teach your young sons before the age of bar mitzvah to drink. Somebody who can't drink and doesn't drink all year long because of health reasons, we view that as dangerous, and therefore he does not have an obligation to drink. So too, young children, meaning bar mitzvah and up, they do have a mitzvah to drink, but again, especially when he's young, there's obviously a danger to him drinking, and you have to be aware of that, and supervisor properly. Also, somebody who knows that if he gets drunk, he's going to come to have any slighting of any mitzvah whatsoever, he should withhold himself from drinking. Whether it'll be washing properly, benching properly, davening mincha or maariv, or having a certain lightheadedness, whatever it is, better that he should not get drunk, and what he does should be done in the proper way. Time, as we said, is the entire day. It has nothing to do with the Suda. Okay, how much does a person have to get intoxicated? So the wording of the Gemara is until he doesn't know the difference between Arur or Haman, Haman is cursed, and Baruch Mordechai, Mordechai is blessed. Many, many different explanations about that. What the Rama brings is that in you could be yaitzeh to that with drinking a little bit more than you usually do and then going to sleep, and when you're asleep, you don't know the difference. But the sleep is not enough. It has to be that you're reaching this point of not knowing the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai through becoming intoxicated through drinking. So if you go to, if you take a nap before having any alcohol whatsoever, you didn't do anything. You just took a nap. If it's because you took a nap and because the alcohol affected you that you felt that you could use a nap and then you went to sleep, then that's when you're yaitzeh with taking a nap. And even those who, but it still has to be that you drink. It's not just enough that it'll affect you a little bit. It has to be somebody who's has a very high tolerance and drinks often. It has to be that you also drink more than you normally would. Not a bunch more, but it has to be that you drink more than you normally would. And again, whatever you do, the best thing that you do it properly in the right way. Different.
If you drink more than you normally do, and you know you go get a headache, you're not going to feel good. Where is that?
Headache and not feel good. I don't know if that qualifies as viewed as a danger. The only, you know, if you drink a little bit more than you normally do and go get take a nap, then you're for sure good. You have what to rely on. But if you're going to limit it to that, you're not going to go take a nap afterwards. I don't know if you, just because you've got a little bit of a headache, if that's viewed as medically, you know.
It's hard to enjoy your Suda. You know, if you don't feel good, like, you have a headache.
But this isn't part of the Suda, right? This is a separate obligation. I don't know if that.
What about somebody taking like medicine that he cannot drink?
If it's dangerous, then he's not obligated to finish.
I
feel like there's a little bit contradiction, because you said that if you would drink and then, first of all, I don't know if you meant to say this, but you said that it would cause you to be lightheaded. Well, of course, if you drink a lot, you're going to be lightheaded.
Well, lightheaded means, and through lightheadedness, you'll do something that's improper.
So that
talking improperly, talking to the other gender improperly.
Right, so you talk.
Doesn't mean just any type of lightheadedness.
Right. Well, you get into like even you said, you know, benching, davening. I mean, I would propose that somebody who's really drunk is, first of all, some people pass out, so they're.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't bench. Also, the potentially
that generally
a danger to themselves, a danger to other people.
Then they shouldn't be drinking. I'm not. Yeah, if they're gonna pass out to the point where they're not gonna end up benching for the suit that they had, that's what Mishnah Berurah is saying. You shouldn't be getting that drunk. Now it's okay to get drunk to the point where at this point right now I'm too intoxicated and halachically I'm not allowed to daven, if I know that I'll be able to get to a point where I will be able to daven, I won't forget to daven. That's fine. But if I'll end up totally missing davening, or if I'll totally pass out that I won't bench, and I won't be able to bench because by the time I wake up from passing out, it'll be too late, then you shouldn't be drinking. That's what the Mishnah Berurah is saying, 100%. Okay, other customs that we have on Purim, not pertaining particularly to any of these mitzvahs, is it's proper to...
Just for the record, I'm sorry to interrupt,
yeah.
But I've heard different opinions because, like, if you're talking about people who do not know, that are not used to drinking, they get drunk, I mean, guys have been killed, they've been hit by cars, they've driven a car, and it's...
Again, that's cases of danger. In the case of danger, the person's not obligated.
Unfortunately, a lot of people are also acting in such a way that's chidul Hashem, you know, so...
Yeah, well, that's also, you're not allowed to.
If you're
that's
honest about this halacha, then a lot of people that you see drinking shouldn't be drinking or should be drinking less. And I think that's what everyone's saying, right?
Yeah.
If you know you might not bench, then what are you drinking another cup of wine for?
No, it's not just about not benching.
Or you might
it's
go
true.
Out and drive or punch someone or insult someone or offend somebody. All these things, like, you shouldn't be doing. Yeah.
It's serious. All I'm trying to say, it's very serious. You know, we don't want people just to say, okay, it's cool, I'm going to do whatever I want to. No, I
never said that.
But
I was very clear
it happens,
on...
It happens. I mean, I don't want to... That's a whole other subject. But it happens right here in the shul. It happens right here in the shul. People are, like, drunk out of their mind. The place stinks with throw up. I mean, really, it's disgusting. And I just...
We have to clean it up, Roy.
Now we got videos.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I...
Yeah. No, it's... To mention on Shabbos.
I know. I'm so saying.
You're
getting wound up.
That's
how it is.
But then
you
say that to our neighbor.
I behave myself.
No, I'm talking about that you have to hear the right. Yeah, you're right.
Other customs pertaining to the day, not particularly to any of these mitzvahs. It's proper to wear your finest Shabbos clothing already from the night of Purim, from before Meir. Come in to Purim wearing Shabbos clothing, and just like on Shabbos and Yom Tov, you should have candles lit and your beds made like a Yom Tov.
When you say candles lit, what kind? You're not saying a bracha.
No, but you should have them. It's like a festive.
Please.
So you can let your regular
yeah.
Yantif, but you just don't say a bracha.
Yeah. The custom which we mentioned earlier of eating minei zeraynim, which we said are leafy greens, that minig is also, some have the minig of eating that also, on the night of Purim. And there are those who say that it's better to have rice because it's more likely that it wasn't just the greens that they ate by the kings, but it was rice. Because rice is something which is considered more of an important food, which is very likely served at the meals of the kings, and that's probably what they ate. You're not allowed to take off your tefillin shachris. You're not allowed to take off tefillin just like every other day. You can't take off your tefillin before the end of davening. Therefore, throughout the Megillah, you should be wearing your tefillin. And more than that, it's brought down that when we lane the pasuk at the end, "La'ihudim ha'sa'ir v'simcha v'sasim yikar," that being that Chazal and the Gemara learn v'yikar, zu tefillin v'yikar, the word v'yikar is referring to tefillin, then it's proper to touch your tefillin at that time. There's a minig to say for the shir shel yayim, either instead of or additional in some places, L'matzeach aliyas ha-shachar, which is the 22nd kapitel in Tehillim, which Chazal learned that it was said about Esther, and Esther herself said it going into Ahasuerus. Being that it's a yantif, and like has similar halachas to yantif, to Chol HaMoed, you should not get a haircut, and you should not cut your nails on Purim, rather before. There is a minig to dress up, and wear costumes and stuff on Purim, even though it might seem a little not proper, but there is no prohibition of davening with your costume, because as long as you're coming and you're focused on your davening, you're davening properly, that's the main thing that we care about.
Doesn't that conflict with wearing your Shabbos clothes?
Yes. There's some of the minig, some do with kids. Some actually have this minig of dressing up in honor, mechubed in an honorable manner, meaning like those who normally wear short jacket and hat will wear, you know, Hasidic garb, you know, bekesha and shtreimel and stuff like that. Therefore, you can do them both. Rav Nissen Karlitz brings that it's improper to dress up some scary costume, because especially with little kids, you can scare them and it can actually be dangerous in some cases, and therefore you shouldn't do it. And besides, the whole point of Purim is to be happy, and when you're scaring kids, although you might find it funny, they don't. There is a mitzvah, general mitzvah of the day is to be happy and enjoy yourself, but that doesn't leave any room whatsoever to do that in an improper way, and therefore you can't make fun of people, and you can't scare people, and especially Talmid Chachamim, or make lightheaded comments and any, you know, leniencies or anything towards the Torah in any which way. You have to be happy, but you have to know how to do it properly, and keep all your halachos.
Shkar.
I have here documentation from Od Yosef Chai, so it's very interesting. It says here that they take it and they give it all on Yerushalayim on the 15th day, and they have a letter from Shlomo Zalman and Rosh Sheinberg saying that that's the right way to do it. But if somebody wants